about it. Let's see that wooden wagon. I saw it out front, Tom. Who's in charge of cleaning that thing? We spread the news and opinion throughout the show, and then we used to scrape the back of it, but now it just seems like nobody even cares about the stuff that's left in there. There is a celebrity that sits in the wagon every single day, holds onto the teeny tiny lady, the pickle jar. Tom, look who it is.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's the...
Is that Cheryl Teagues?
Oh, it's Benny Hill. No, it's the guy that got attacked by those two MAGA guys in Chicago.
I was bruised, but my ribs were not cracked. And they're not broken.
What?
I went to the doctor immediately for a gas probe, and I was not hospitalized.
What?
Both my doctors in L.A. and Chicago cleared me to perform.
What?
But said to take care, obviously.
But none of it was true.
How did Tim Iman get in my wagon?
Will he be in the wagon next? Oh, my. Who was talking about that? David Bowes yesterday? We both agreed how sad it was.
Yeah, we feel for him.
Oh, he has not. We haven't heard from him yet. All right. But we see him on video actually taking the chair. So there's you can't blame it on somebody else.
As David Bowes, you imitate him. He just kind of looks to his left, looks to his right. Is anyone watching?
It's not even that nice of a chair. There is the fact that this is in Crosscut. Interesting piece. In Seattle, 1 in 5 people are booked into jail are homeless.
To give this any kind of a statistical context, 1% of the people in Seattle are homeless, yes. And yet they make up 20% of the arrests.
Is it because they're committing 20% of the crimes?
Well, they are crimes, but they are varying degrees. They profile this one woman who was picked up first for heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of her arrests are for failure to appear in court. Oh, yeah. And they say the problem with these kinds of situations, when your life is as, I don't know how you, disorganized, I'm trying to come up with a neutral.
How about broken?
Broken, okay. Yeah. As a lot of homeless lives are, for them to appear in court is much tougher than for most of us who have kind of, you know, regular jobs and lives and we schedule this and that.
Right.
And because of that, every time that happens, they end up, you know, being arrested and then put in jail. And they say that what happens is they call it the ultimate shoot. If you think of a game of chutes and ladders, setting off a cascade of negative effects. You end up, you're in prison, you're in jail, you know, for however long it is, not that many, but you come out, you have a criminal record. It's already hard to find housing and jobs with a criminal record, but you're also isolated. You're cut off from your case managers. You occasionally lose your belongings in the intervening time while you were in a prison. You lose jail. You lose a spot in your shelter. And a lot of these things, they just kind of, compound themselves more and more and more and more. Now, they do talk to Sean Whitcomb of Seattle Police, and he says, listen, we're not arresting them, you know, for things that we wouldn't arrest other people for. It's not like we're criminalizing homelessness. But the thing is, once you've committed one crime and then you have these court dates, it kind of adds, you know, just sort of adds to doubling and tripling and quadrupling their problems.
Right. So she explains, and as other people that they talk to in this piece, you get arrested for, let's say, shoplifting. You go there, they charge you with the shoplifting, then they say, now come back, don't come back. So then they send out a bench warrant. So then the cop stops you, and most of these cops know these people.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, what's going on? And then they run the numbers on Bob, or they look, and they say, there's an outstanding warrant. I got to take you in, Bob.
Yeah.
He knows at that point. They put the cuffs on him and take him in because he didn't appear for the second one, right?
Yes.
He got in on the first, then he's got to come back in because of failure to appear.
Yes.
So it's just this cycle, which costs money and which takes time, but it's part of what happens when you attract homeless people to your city.
And when you have a case manager, the case managers only can help clients staying at the department's facility. And so if you're not in the facility, you're in jail, then you don't have a case manager. Then you have to start all over again. And once you've established a relationship with a case manager, then you're bumped to the back of the line. Huh. When you get out of jail, then they say you meet another 26-year-old psychology graduate who's just starting out trying to get to know you. And then here's an irony of ironies. If for some reason, whatever crime you've committed to put you in jail for more than 90 days, you lose the chronically homeless tag because you've been literally off the streets for 90 days. And that means that you don't qualify for some federal housing that you might have otherwise. So it's an excellent article kind of explaining how tough it is to be homeless and why, criminality happens and continues to happen even when it's not an actual crime, not like you know, thieving or something.
Well, the system is set up that you got to reappear again. Yeah. So why doesn't the person come back in the second time? She said, I started to walk there. Yeah. And as I was walking there, I needed a fix. And I was walking by a bunch of addicts and a bunch of junkies because we attract those people in Seattle. And they're right out in front of the courthouse, which is crazy. Yeah. So while she's walking to the courthouse to go in there, she walks by all these people that the police are not arresting for selling distribution and injecting heroin, because you can do it right there at the bus stop. No one says anything. Well, and she gets a fix, and then she ends up not going in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, she has other problems in her life.
She does.
So showing up in court might not seem the most pressing at the time. Yeah, I mean, you can. I mean, it'd be fine. In fact, that's what we're doing. You can crack the whip and say, listen, you know, this is your responsibility. If you decide to take a hit of heroin instead of showing up in court, then this is what you get. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, there is that. They think that Seattle's a very progressive city when it comes to dealing with the homeless and all of this.
How's that working?
And criminally. Well, the thing is, at this point, it's not working well enough. So the question is, do you crack down harder, or do you try to understand that missing a court date might not be worth of rearresting? Or putting him in jail. But, yeah, keeping a case manager. For instance, I don't know if you can wave a wand and have this done, but if you have a case manager and then you're out of the facility, we maybe ought to adjust the rules so that that case manager that you had, when you come out in 25 days, you can go back to
that case manager.
That would be something.
What budget does that come out of?
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, it's DES, I think, right?
Right, DES. But I think it's that money's coming from the jail people. Let's see, the interesting piece, if you take a look at the statistics, by the time you reach a certain age, you really stop committing a bunch of crimes. You either get too tired, or you don't need it, or the testosterone in your body changes, and you just sort of get, you know, the average, if you hit about 45, your chances of reoffending and committing again goes way down.
Plummets.
Yes.
It's really interesting that, the hot blood of criminality happens in your 20s and early 30s. By the time you're in your late 30s or hit your 40s, it really dissipates.
Yeah.
So the case is for capping all prison sentences at 20 years. Now, I can imagine people going, oh, this is outrageous. Well, there are obvious exceptions to this, you know, if you're a serial killer or something. But the basic approach is, and he even acknowledges this, he says, I understand this is going to be outrageous. This is a radical proposal, but it's just something I want to sort of throw out there, get in the hopper of discussion materials. And that is, most people that are in prison, by the time, if you've given them a 20-year sentence, they will be, in effect, rehabilitated. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to be perfect people, but they're less apt to commit at least the same crime that they are in prison for. 20 years, his argument is, it's a long time. If you can think back of where you were 20 years ago, imagine all the things that have happened in those 20 years. That is a significant chunk of anybody's life.
Yes.
And they say that keeping people in prison longer doesn't help them. Eventually, most of these people are going to get released, unless you get, you know, life-term imprisonment, which is another issue you can deal with later. He says they're going to get released. Why not, if you treat prison not, you know, think of it as a rehabilitation and not just punishment, then they'll be better, you know, societal members when they come out.
Right.
And keeping them in for longer than 20 sort of defeats the purpose. He admits it's going to be controversial, but he thinks, for the most part, people will be better off if they only have 20-year sentences.
We will need to change how society deals with these guys. So when you come out, you got to be able to not stop them from getting some type of housing. Plus, we got to be able to employ them. Right now, there are 7 million unfulfilled jobs in the United States. We only have 6 million people. I forget the number that's mixed in there. They could be working, that are not working. The idea is we don't have enough people to fill the jobs that have been available because of this booming economy. Huh. When the people get out, it'd be nice to get them a job, get them some sort of training or something. If it costs $35,000 or $40,000 a year to house one inmate, the problem that I've seen people write about, I don't know how much of this is true. They say there is a corporate industry of jailing. That most of these are privately run institutions, and they don't want you to release those guys. Because if you release those guys, then it's all of a sudden they're not making money. They like the fact you get arrested, you get stuck in there, and then they get paid X amount of dollars to feed you, and they run this thing through a corporation. They don't want you to get rid of their customers.
No, I mean, I think that's exactly right. The problem is that we have, like, double whatever the, you know, say, Europe has in terms of prisoners. So we They said in the 80s and 90s, there was an impression that we were under-incarcerated. Now, almost everybody agrees we're over-incarcerated. We have way too many. We went from like 330,000 people in prison to 1.5 billion or something. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's outrageous what happened. And they said, we need to address it. 1.5. So 330,000 in 1980, 1.5 million in 2016.
Uh-huh.
Now they say things have started to dip. But right now, there's a general, except for Jeff Sessions and the prison lobby, the private prison lobby that he sort of represents, most people think that, we have too many people in prison for too long a time. This is the beginning of adjustment. Now, the visceral reaction is, you kill me. You kill my family member. I don't want you out in 20. 20 is not nearly long enough.
Well, you know, you have different ones, right?
And you can make different
ones. I mean, no, for murder, for rape, stuff like that, right? Okay. Let's see. Alexandria Cortez. Tom says she's not a political leader, but don't tell that to Twitter.
I know. She is a social media.
Nobody.
Even Trump can't compete with her.
No.
Yeah.
She puts up 3 minutes of her playing sort of the devil's advocate in a finance hearing, trying to show there's a such thing as dark money that's causing campaigns corrupted.
Yeah, it's a panel of ethics experts. So she's asking these ethics experts, are we going to play something from this?
Let's see. Do we have anything of it?
Okay, because basically she said, okay, with this kind of money, what could I do or what couldn't I do?
Yeah, here's some of it. So here she is setting it up.
Let's play a game. Let's play a lightning round game.
So this is a 3-minute Twitter she sent out. And this thing's been watched by how many people?
Millions.
A 30-something million?
30-some million, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 37.5.
Yeah.
Bad guy. And I want to get away with as much bad things as possible, ideally to enrich myself and advance my interest, even if that means putting my interests ahead of the American people. So if I want to run a campaign that is entirely funded by corporate political action committees, is there anything that legally prevents me from doing that?
No.
Let's say I have some skeletons in my closet that I need to cover up so that I can get elected. Mr. Smith, is it true that you wrote this article, this opinion piece for the Washington Post entitled, "These Payments to Women Were Unseemly, That Doesn't Mean They Were Illegal"?
I wrote a piece under that headline in the Post, so I assume that's right.
Okay, great. So, green light for hush money. I can do all sorts of terrible things. It's totally legal right now for me to pay people off.
It would be totally legal for you to pay people off, yes. If you were to take campaign finance dollars and not report where they were, that's illegal. She said he is. The question is that did he take the money? She's talking about Trump. Did he take the money and pay the money to her with his own money, or was it campaign dollars? And then if it was campaign dollars, show us that you reported that you wrote a check for $130,000, or we will string you up just like we did with John Edwards.
Yeah. So is there any?
She goes on continuing the question. It's just the fact that we're talking. We don't need to dig into the fact that she doesn't quite know exactly what she's talking about. It's the fact that 40 million people.
Yeah, the thing is, it's very compelling because what she does is she creates a simple scenario in which we can understand. Most of us do not care a whit about campaign finance or about PAC money and all this.
Right.
And she manages to make them in bite-sized issues, raising the question. I think she's very effective as a communicator.
Yes, she is.
Okay, so then that's the first thing. I think now you can raise objections on this. I don't know what the purpose of playing this stuff was, but it shows how compelling she is. Why she is such a media presence is because people can understand what she's saying and what she's setting up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to just talk about what she just said, one of the things is it is true that you can run an entire campaign with PAC money.
No one's ever done that.
But exactly, that's right. Then the counter thing that you've pointed out by Scott Blackburn says, yes, that is technically true. You could run an entire campaign.
You could do
However,
that.
It's never been done because you need a lot more money than what PACs raise for you.
Right.
But so she makes a compelling point.
And the PAC money is this. You are allowed to be involved in politics. The fact that you're a corporations, I'm a corporation. And I'm allowed to donate money to campaigns. There's a limit to how much I can give.
Corporations are people, too.
Yes, they are. You and I can form a corporation. Now, is either one of us less of a person? No. So a corporation is a legal distinction that protects me when it comes to lawsuits and things like that. I've got a corporate veil, so you can't come after my personal assets. You and I form a corporation. We are still allowed to address our government. She makes it seem like some corporation is going to take money to get somebody elected.
That's right. Well, because corporations can be corrupt like people can be corrupt. So that's
corporations
her stance.
Are people. People are corrupt.
But most people think that Jacob is different than a corporation. Okay. So, I mean, that's
Jacob
people make that distinction.
A corporation
he can
if
be,
he
but
wants.
He isn't. And the
and
idea
his
is
rights
she's
do
making
not
a distinction.
End with this term corporation.
But we're wasting our time. We should be playing her so people can understand why she's so compelling.
All right, then I'll give you. Here she is ending her role in the president.
Is it possible that any elements of this story apply to our current government and our current public servants right now?
Yes.
Yes. So we have a system that is fundamentally broken.
Is it? By the way, Cortez, I would say this.
Why are you arguing with her?
We're supposed to be listening to her because...
We got it. She's very compelling.
No, you want to argue with her. The point is that she has 37.5 million people listening to campaign finance discussions, and that's what's compelling about her is how she frames it.
But I'm just putting in perspective.
No,
Cortez, you know how much money your opponent raised compared to you? Do you know how much money? That's what I say to her. So you're telling me money is an influence in campaigns. Yes. Yeah. How much money did your guy raise compared to you? Give me the ratio.
I don't know why
because
you're so
mad. I'm not bad. I'm just making a point. I'm allowed to. I'm Italian.
Curly? Doesn't sound very Italian to me.
I'm Irish. I get drunk and punch people. Right. Is that better?
That's better. Yeah. I'm Irish Catholic, too. I relate.
Okay. My point is that... Yes, there's money in campaigns, and yes, you're allowed to donate, and yes, you're allowed to have political actions. Yes, and by the way, just because you raise more or have more money doesn't guarantee you a win. The fact that 30 million people watch this thing, but no one bothers to counter it, and a lot
what
of the junk that
people
she talks.
You've got this article right here that counters it.
You know how far Emmy O's into Google? I had to dig to find that. I was like 16 O's in.
I know. But look at Donald Trump lies 5 times a day. We don't analyze each of that.
We fact check Donald. We don't fact check this gal.
That's real ridiculous. You're missing the whole point.
The point is she's young and she's compelling and 30 million people listen to campaign finance.
That's an effective point because it's true.
We've made
Donald Trump managed to pay off somebody that he tried to keep out of the campaign. And the question is, was that legal or not? And he says it is legal.
Yes.
And she says, therefore, we should change it because it shouldn't be legal for him to do that. That he's buying their silence.
Sure.
And the irony is, as this guy Blackburn points out, is that the irony is, no, the great thing is that if you did it privately, it would be handled differently. It's because it was part of a campaign that helps the campaign. You should. Well, clearly it was because it was right before the election. That's why he freaked and paid her off.
Yeah.
A month or two before.
With campaign money or his own money?
Well, the thing is, to affect the campaign, it's considered campaign money.
The law is.
That's why Michael Cohen's in trouble.
The law
he lied
is
about
if
it.
He writes the check out of his own pocket, if he takes it from donors.
Yeah.
And then uses it and transfers it over to her for her silence, it does have an effect upon the campaign. But the same way that if I were to buy a new pair of shoes and belts to make myself look better when I stand on the campaign trail, I buy a suit. Now, I've spent the money to affect how voters receive me and how they perceive me. Now, if I take that money and buy that suit with campaign finance dollars, I'm going to have to justify that and report that.
Yes.
He quiets her down so she does not talk about the fact that they had an affair for 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
He pays with his own money.
Yeah, but did he? Because he didn't. It was Michael Cohen who paid for it. And at first he said, I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't. Michael Cohen said, what the hell you didn't? You paid me back.
I know, but what money?
So he lied initially by saying, I don't have anything to do with it. I didn't pay her. Then it turns out, oh, no, it's better if you did pay her with your own private money, because otherwise it looks like it's campaign money. Then you're in trouble, so he changed the story. So he lied back.
But where did the money come from? From the campaign or from his own dollars?
I don't know if you pay money to affect the campaign, whether that's considered a campaign finance.
I paid money to buy a suit in order to affect the campaign. I bought a brand new suit to affect how voters would look at me.
Same exact expense. I don't know. Silencing for $150,000, that was an expensive suit.
Very nice suit.
That's right. Did it come
she
with two
an
women?
With the guy for like 4 months.
What's that?
They were lovers for like 4 months.
So is that a good point or a bad point?
Both of them. Pox on both their houses.
Okay, fine. They probably have it.
She's pretty. Oh! Ouch! Sorry for you off. Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Welcome back, Lake Washington Windows and Doors. I guess they wanted more business, so they came back. Hey, why isn't anybody calling for windows and doors? Let's get back on the Talbot Curley Show. Lake Washington Windows and Doors, thanks so much for being a part of the show. And if you need any help, especially cold weather coming back again. My kid is like, God, Dad, did you hear snow? I said, what? Next Wednesday. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You didn't have enough days off? Still cold. Cold weather comes back. And if you have a leaky window or a cracked window or a seal the door that is not set right, it's like Washington Windows and Doors. Investment now saves you money down the road. And also, Online Trading Academy text line is always there for you. We do love hearing from you. You can text us at 989073. And Carl comes through that and invites me to go to a bar in Tacoma and drink with him. He owns a bar in Tacoma.
Perfect. Non-alcoholic beer. That's what you're ordering.
No,
right?
I would drink whatever, and then don't judge me. I can't believe you like that social shaming.
What do you mean? We all approve of something that's good for us.
Right? We do.
Don't we?
Do we?
Like safe injection sites? You know, there's that social
pressure for anybody
to make sure that you shoot up heroin. No, I thought you applauded the fact that fewer and fewer people smoke. That's generally seen as a good.
No.
And so,
No.
Is that right? Okay.
Here's what they've done. You've made the choices to smoke intolerable. The carton of cigarettes is $75.
That's
the
right.
place I mean, to smoke.
We
you
did
can't
it to
smoke
ourselves.
Anymore.
Yes.
But I understand. People said, "Well, this is not healthy for society."
That's right.
Right. So we are going to make it as unpleasant as possible for you.
Yeah. Well,
right. We're going to charge you a lot of money.
That's right.
And stop you from smoking.
But your kids are not smokers because of that societal pressure, and that's a good thing. Your kids are healthier for that.
Mm.
And the idea is, if kids drink less, that's a good thing. Kids drink way too much, and that's the problem. This is a good thing that they're actually. They're having less sex and drinking less. What the hell are they doing?
They're online.
Yeah, I guess.
Or they've got ADD and they're looking for love. How to find love and like when you have ADHD.
Yeah, this is an interesting case. This guy has been studying ADHD clients for 35 years, and he's also married to a woman, he says, for 35 years. And I can't tell, based on the article, if he has ADD and ADHD himself or it's his wife. But he says, he has a lot of experience. And he says, based on that 30-plus years of experience, he realizes that here's one of the problems for, I mean, if ADHD is an issue in your life, there are all sorts of problems that you have to deal with in terms of school, in terms of work, and now he's applying it to your love life. He says that the most romantic people, the people that are most incurably romantic, usually have ADHD, which I never heard that idea before.
I never heard that either.
But the idea is that you're always searching for this kind of you know, this ideal love, and he says, ultimately, he says, that search is more foolish than fruitless than positive. And so what you really need, if you're an ADHD person, you should probably look for something like rather than love. It's easy to fall in love with somebody, and the thing is, you just fall serially in love with a whole bunch of people, but it never deepens. If you find somebody that you really like that you also can love, you're in much better shape because like, as he says, is sturdier than love. So you should ask yourself.
It's more tangible, it feels.
It actually
so it
is.
It grounds you, and you need to be grounded if you have ADHD.
That's exactly right. Perfect. Right. So the questions you ask yourself, do I look forward to spending time with her? If you're a man? Do we laugh a lot together? Do we play together? Can we tease each other? Given free time, is she the person I want to be with? When I think of her, do I smile? The idea here is that If all those things are, you answer yes to those and a lot more, then the fact that you might have romantically fallen in love with the person is one thing. But if you can also answer yes to those like things, then that's going to survive. And the problem with ADHD is it often is too temporary. You flit from one to the other, always seeking that kind of, that romantic love. And as we all know, you know, that sort of gives away maybe up to 2 years, I think I've heard.
One other quick thing on this is if you want to find the right person, you're supposed to take the Briggs-Meyer personality test. You ever done that? It takes 12 minutes. You can do it online.
I absolutely love it. My daughter lives by it.
Okay, you could be an architect. Everybody. You could be a logical person, a commander, a debater. These are the personalities. An advocate, a mediator, a protagonist, a campaigner. Have you had it done yet, Tom?
Oh yeah, I'm an ENTJ, if anyone cares.
ENTJ. ENTJ. Oh, there you are. Oh, you really think you are, huh?
No, I know I am. I've been tested.
Are you bold and imaginative, strong-willed leader, always finding a way of making one? And you are making one? Is that what you are?
I am, John, and I'm apparently being resented by my partner here. Which, what are you, John?
Let me see.
I'm soft like a flower.
I
that
am.
That blooms under hot lights.
I'm a campaigner. I'm enthusiastic. I'm creative, socially free-spirited, and can always find a reason to smile.
Okay, what are your letters?
Oh, E, N as in Nancy,
yeah.
F as in Frank, P as in Paul.
Okay, so you're E and FP. Okay, I can't wait. So, and I'm TJ, so we are E and N. So we're extroverts, and I forget what the N stands for. And then we're opposite on the last two.
So the point is you're supposed to take this test, and then if you find someone that you like, you have them take it. And then it goes down the bottom and says, an ENFJ will never get along with any. They break it all down. You're like, don't bother, because you guys will never see eye to eye.
But the thing is, it's great for family dynamics, because inevitably, you're not all going to be the same. Even if two ENTJs marry each other, they're bound to have children that aren't ENTJs, and so then how do you cope? And it's a better way to understand why people are the way they are. oh, I notice when I tell Kate something, she reacts this way. When I tell my daughter Madeline something, she reacts differently.
Right.
And if you have, that's...
You adjust on that.
Exactly.
That's good. But yours. I'm building a mansion.
ENTJ, we're the best.
Yeah. Couples put a friend finder, which, by the way, what, you going to say something
else? I was going to say, we don't have time for this better story, do we?
Because
we have to make sure we have time for you. Okay.
Only because I wrote to the person,
and
they said, okay, you can tell the story because no one listens to your show.
Right. As long as she doesn't, we're safe.
Friend finder is on your phone automatically.
Yes.
Couples will... say, hey, I'll follow you when we make sure you're okay driving from here to the airport.
Let's location share. And once you do that, you are location sharing all the bloody time.
Yeah, you can't get off it, according to... Yeah, my buddy's like, once you get on, try to get off. Because then the person goes, why do you not want me to know where you are? Where are you?
That's exactly. And
then, oh, no. I don't mind. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then I'll stay on.
Yeah.
And you stay on. So there's no escaping it.
The idea is, it used to be, okay, how many dates, if that's even sort of an old term these days, before you really commit, like it used to be having sex or moving in together. Now it's location sharing. Hey, honey, we've been going together for a year. Do you feel
location sharing? There is no good way to get out of it because if you try, you end up hurting the other person's feelings,
right.
Or immediately they're suspicious to begin with.
What are you hiding, John?
Right.
What are you hiding? Yes.
Yeah.
So this is a great story. We don't have enough time to do the entire analysis of this, but it's perfect for how you actually cope with location. I don't know anything about location sharing, but you actually lived it.
Well, I know people that have lived it, Tom.
Okay.
And here's the story that I got from my friend who said no one listens to the show.
Okay.
So he was location sharing with a woman.
Okay.
But he had a friend that he liked to go see, that he was no longer dating, but he enjoyed the company of this individual.
Sure.
Okay. See? Are you going to make fun of it? I thought you were a bold, imaginative, strong-willed leader always finding a way to make it.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'm making you now.
Hold on. So a guy used to take the phone and throw it under a bush near a Starbucks, he said. And then he would drive to this woman's house, hang out over there, and then drive back and pick his phone back up again. His girlfriend would go, wow, you spending
a lot
of time at Starbucks. Well, you were in the parking lot next to Safeway for 3 hours.
I can't. That literally happened as a way, and that is the best way to avoid location sharing information that you don't want out in public. I think that's hilarious. So he's willing to risk losing his iPhone on the off chance that he can sneak a platonic visit, no less.
I said, where will you hide the thing? He goes, I'd tell you exactly where I was. He explained to me. I said, I kind of know where that Starbucks is. He said he would wrap it in a bag. I mean, and then he would like dig a little hole and cover a little dirt over top, put it over the bag. He said, I would hide it underneath bushes. He goes, who's going to find it under the bush?
I was like,
all right, well, there you go. And then he'd pick the phone back up and then he,
So how long did this last for? Do you know?
I'll find out.
Even if the phone gets stolen, you just start tracking the phone because that's the
beauty of it.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is the one good thing. Yeah,
yeah.
And it is meant to be kind of safe and secure. If you are new to town, they say, and you're not sure where your partner is, kind of you know how close.
Well,
they
you
are
can track
home.
The person for an hour, a day, or forever.
Yeah, that's right. Just like a wedding ring.
All right, your letters are pouring in.
Are they? No, not over here.
Yeah. Because apparently as a campaigner, I tend to exaggerate. All right, right back. I wish Care Partners Senior Living was in Rosemont, Pennsylvania. My mom's really struggling. She's got Parkinson's. It's a horrible, horrible situation. And the family's dealing with that. And if your family has a situation where mom or dad's health is in decline, or at least they need to have some extra help, it's Care Partners Senior Living there for you. Check them out. Hey, it's nice that they also sponsor the Tom McCullough Show Mail. And here comes the mailman now. Hit it, mailman.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Yes, and we have lots of mail. And Jacob?
I own a lot of underwear.
And you own a lot of underwear. All right, we're going to get to that letter of the day in just a bit. Let's remember, teeny tiny lady, she's the one that reads it. Oh, hi, teeny tiny. She's going to tell us which letter it is, but let's get started now. Tom?
Well, you know what? We hear from Wes in Puyallup.
Oh, good.
about President's Day, which was yesterday. Weston Puyallup here in response to Little Andy. Andy addressed him yesterday.
This is what the show's now being used for.
Right. I know. Yesterday, I was quietly, this is Wes, mind you. Yesterday, I was quietly working away when out of nowhere, little Andy insults me. John Curley did not just grace me with his presence at the hospital 2 years ago. I had to get the surgeon to write, "I love the Tom and Curley show," on my leg before surgery.
True.
You see, little Andy, this show isn't just a great show. It's a way of life to me. Hospital for pneumonia? You wimp.
That's right.
This country's very smart. We have very smart people.
And Wes, you are very smart. Yeah, little Andy is so dumb he couldn't keep his lungs inflated. John's fan versus Tom's fan, 253. Hey, Pierce County residents, rural Pierce County. I'm talking to the great Royal McKenna area.
Greater Roy McKenna.
Yeah, Roy McKenna, that kind of Pierce County. And John, I love Tom.
Hey.
And I have white hot hatred for you. I love you boys. You do a good show.
All right. Let's hear it.
Yes.
And 425.
Yes.
Wow. Good job, Tom. Dissed three quarters of the state with your first comment. I couldn't even remember. What were we talking about? And I just dismissed it as Liberty, which is Eastern Washington, which is they wanted their whole third state.
All right, moving on.
Where's the
Dakota School's 425?
Quarters.
This is what happens when a dog catches a car. It slams face head first into the bumper. When you remove a massive piece of funding from a budget and add a huge expense, of course, you have a thing called a shortfall.
Okay. Tacoma Schools continued ranks in Carnation. I've worked for Microsoft for about 15 years, and if the teachers get what they want, I think it's probably time for me to switch jobs. Their wages plus benefits are getting comparable to what I'm getting if you include the many days of vacations and summertime off. Mm-hmm. I would kill for a month or two off every year.
Ethan in Kirkland says the average public school teacher salary in Washington is $60,203 as of January 1st, 2019. Teachers are required to have four-year degrees as well as a year-long certificate program on top of the minimum. Aren't you always saying people should work hard to get good education to make more money? Why do you feel differently? If it's a teacher who worked hard, good, got an education, often a master's degree, gets paid well, even though teachers make less money on average than other workers with the same level of education.
And on Les Schwab, 360, I knew there was a reason I love John. We share the love of the smell of tires.
Yes, there's a lot of us, I believe. Hair discrimination. My girlfriend who's black has trouble with her job. She was written up for hairstyles and worked 3 hours the night before. Her hair is very thick, and each time she sits down to style it, it's a project that can take up to 1 to 4 hours, which is why it's frustrating to be told it's unprofessional. But whose discretion? And for some reason, people not only awe at her hair in public, but they feel that she has a right to touch it without permission. Some people just don't understand the challenges she goes through to make it look professional.
That's Mr. 253. Very interesting. On the campaign finance issue, we hear from Eric and Bothell.
Once made famous by this show.
Holy crap. If the quality of the suit you buy influences the voters, really? How shallow are those voters? I can only speak for myself, but I select the candidate with the best ideas and best character. Adultery, theft, corruptibility are the things that disqualify any candidate for me. Money is the enemy of politics. It allows us to buy the influence of people that can be corrupted.
Money is speech.
Just saying.
Speech is money. Seattle versus the East Side, 253. Well, if you're the kind of person who says, I suppose you'd say shot across the bowels.
But you corrected him. That was great. You caught that.
I did. Thank you, Tom.
You didn't commit it for a change. And 2020, 206, feel the burn in your wallet.
As Dems, I say, go away, Bernie.
And 425, Bernie should run as vice president for a stronger ticket.
I like this social policy. Lower drug costs, legalize marijuana, but I hate taxes on carbon and free health care. Socialism was cool before I was an adult. I pay taxes now.
And 425, I used to have strong opinions about the Democratic nomination, but for 2020, it's anyone but T-Rump.
Yes, and Steven Spielberg, 206. Go to the Crest and Shoreline, $4 a seat, amazing popcorn. Now playing, among others, A Star is Born in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
right?
Crest is a great
lesson. Smell like tires.
Now it is time for the letter of the day.
I'm a Tom and Curley sommelier. I've gone hunting for the 9-year-old boy ghost in the mansions of Pennsylvania. I've swum with the promiscuous dolphins off the coast of France. I even once stowed away in the infamous Manoru's wagon. I thought Alex Jones noticed me, but it turns out he was just screaming at nothing. Tell me what you're having for dinner, and I'll tell you which segment to listen to. About to tear into a Dutch oven lobster? The rich, earthy flavors will pair nicely with the barely structured chaos of a know-it-all quiz. Brilliant, wow. 253.
Well, that was a fun way to spend 3 hours.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow.
Bye-bye.